You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
I'm Caroline Hyde at Bloomberg's World Headquarters in New York.
And I'm Ed Ludlow in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg Technology. Risk on in the markets, AI a driver, and no surprise, Caroline, from Powell.
No surprise, markets risk on. But have you noticed all these chatbots, from Bernie to Bing to, of course, Bard over at Google? They're all named with a B. We get into that in a moment, but let's get into the race first and foremost. The AI race, it is on, Ed. From Microsoft to Google to Baidu, we bring you the latest global generative AI developments and speak to a key executive from Microsoft on its big Bing announcement.
And honing in on the chip industry, Arm posting a 28% increase in revenue in its latest quarter. We speak with the CEO of the company as it prepares what parent SoftBank hopes will be the largest ever IPO for a chip maker.
Plus, Zoom slashing 15% of its workforce while Meta warns managers to get back to making things or leave. All that and so much more coming up. But first, SoftBank, it posted its earnings losing nearly $6 billion in the most recent quarter. Failed startup bets in its Vision Fund segment. But the silver lining the conglomerate has in its arsenal is its ownership of Arm. The UK-based company's chip designs and its technology are present throughout consumer electronics. Just think, the chips that are powering almost every single smartphone on the planet. Well, the designs come from Arm. It just reported a 28% increase in revenue for the latest quarter. It's preparing, we understand, for a highly anticipated IPO this year. That's why we are so pleased to welcome the CEO, Rene Haas. It is a joy to have you with us. Just talk to us about this 28% increase in revenue, because we've seen overall the chip sector be somewhat decimated, the demand-supply flip reversing, and yet you manage to be pushing higher when your clients are falling. What's happening?
We're very happy with the quarter that we've just had. Our revenue was up, as you said, 28%. We saw an increase of 60% in our licensing business and 12% in royalties. But more importantly, we've seen a significant diversification in our business, Caroline. Our business around the cloud has been up double digits. Our business in automotive, probably triple digits. This diversification strategy is not new. We started it a number of years ago, but we're just now starting to see the fruits of that labor as the power efficiency of which Arm is known for is finding its way into the data center and all EVs.
Can you give us some targets around the focus on data centers, automotive, PCs, rather than just the smartphone sector?
You know, these areas are places where the growth has been very significant in the last number of years, and we made a very conscious decision to focus on these new markets, particularly with new products. Our Neoverse line for servers, adding functional safety to our automotive products, and as a result, we've seen huge benefit from that. Every major cloud provider now has ARM instances in the cloud. AWS, 48 out of their top 50 customers are able to use ARM. And in electric vehicles, we're seeing companies such as ST, Renesas, Mobileye, NVIDIA, all shipping silicon into automotive.
Rene, good afternoon to you. Look, as Caroline said, you bucked the trend. I want to dig into this idea of how you continue to grow when your customers don't. Is this an issue of lag, that what the rest of the chip sector is going through, you are not yet experiencing, but will experience later on in the year?
We're no different than the rest of the industry. We certainly feel the effects of the slowdown in certain markets, but we are buffered to some extent. As I said, we've seen significant growth by gaining market share in the cloud, gaining market share in automotive. In smartphones, where it's been well documented, there's been a slowdown in that industry. We've actually seen some very good results, and that's been due to kind of two main factors. One is our version 9 architecture, which carries a higher royalty rate, which means more value for us. But also, more importantly, we're just seeing more technology inside these smartphones. More processors that find their ways into all different areas of the application space means more CPUs inside the smartphone, which again means more royalties for us. So we've been able to be buffered to some extent in that space and seeing growth really across all our markets.
Okay, how confident are you that those outliers of performance that you've just flagged can continue throughout calendar 23?
You know, who can be really confident these days in terms of predicting where the market's going to go, Ed? But we're very confident in the long-term secular trends that are good for ARM. And that is, number one, more compute. And number two, that is more power-efficient compute. Again, when you look at the data center, when you look at automotive, these are areas that really need a high degree of compute, but they need a high degree of power efficiency. You know, another number that really surprised folks last quarter was a record number of shipments by the ARM partners, 8 billion chips that were shipped by our partners. And that feeds a cycle of more and more people who are developing software on those 8 billion chips, which feeds into more demand. So I think the quarter-to-quarter perturbations, you're always going to see those relative to what's going on with inventory and such. But we are very confident that the long-term secular trends that we're seeing in the industry are very good for us.
Someone else is confident around you, and it's SoftBank. They're confident that the IPO will be done by this year. Are you doing a dual approach? Is it London, New York? Do you have a time frame for us?
I can say that we are fully committed to an IPO in 2023. There has been a lot of planning underway already on this. We've been doing a lot of work. Regarding location, listing venue, I can't talk about that. No decisions have been made there yet.
What needs to be cleared up, T's crossed, I's dotted, when it comes to a relationship, for example, with Qualcomm ahead of the initial public offering? Of course, there's been dispute there, one of your key clients. How is that progressing?
You know, I can't comment on the litigation there, Caroline. I have to leave that up to our legal team. You know, I can say, though, that we are very confident in the case, and we think the court will ultimately agree with our position.
Rene, I want to talk about China a little bit. You know, ARM is all about the underlying technology, the intellectual property, chip designs. How impacted are you by U.S. and allied efforts to cut China off to access to the latest in chip technology?
Like any other company, we comply 100% with whatever the U.S. government comes down with vis-a-vis export controls. Because we actually don't make anything physical, that is, what we deliver is intellectual property, i.e. the license rights to build a product with our designs, we're not so directly impacted by some of the recent rulings, which really impact more people who are actually building the chips, either chip companies or fab equipment makers or the fabs themselves. So we have some level of indirect impact, and we comply whenever there's something that we need to comply with vis-a-vis law, of course, but given where we sit in the value chain, not so directly impacted as some of the other companies might be.
As we discussed, your technology is present through so much that goes into consumer electronics. Your designs are sort of integral to the chips that go into smartphones. But the hot topic, the area in vogue, is artificial intelligence. Is ARM competitive in that field in terms of the chips that it's designing? And I know that you work closely with some big tech names that are doing more in-house chips in this area.
Yeah, I'd like to say we're far more than competitive. You know, there's a lot of AI that runs on ARM already. When you think about inference at the edge and any kind of artificial intelligence that's being run there, that's all being run on ARM. They're being run on ARM CPUs. There's been a lot of buzz, you know, in the industry and certainly even today regarding generative AI and ChatGPT and such. That's going to mean even more demand for ARM technology. You know, when you look at the trade-offs between the workloads that run on the CPU and the workloads that run on accelerators, there's room for some of this acceleration to take place in both areas. I think the area where we're going to really perform well in this space, again, is around power efficiency. These new AI algorithms are incredibly compute intensive, and in a world where we just don't have that much energy to throw at the problem, having energy efficient processors to assist and offload is going to be critically important.
All right, Rene Haas, ARM CEO. We look forward to that IPO that you're committed to at some point this year.
The big reveal today, Microsoft announcing it's utilizing OpenAI technology to power new versions of its Bing search engine and Edge browser. We're pleased to dig into this now. Yusuf Mehdi is with us, Microsoft Corporate Vice President of Modern Life and Devices Group. It has been a busy day. And just how busy has it been in terms of sign-ups? There's a wait list to access to start using Bing in this way. What's the reaction been like, Yusuf?
Yeah, it's early days, but it's already, or early hours, I should say. There's a lot of sign-up interest. I'm getting a lot of emails from people who want to get in front of the wait list. But I think we've struck a nerve. I think we actually have kind of lit up people's imagination about what's possible with a new generation of search by infusing AI and chat, and then getting to a place where you don't just get search results, but you can actually get answers to your questions. And I think it's struck a chord so far, so we're pretty excited about it.
Struck a nerve is an interesting way of saying it, because it feels like you struck a nerve, lit a fire underneath Google as well, because it's talking up, it's barred at the moment. Just discuss why there seems to be this sudden flurry of announcements, this race upon us for this generative AI within search.
Well, we've been working at it for a little while, and we've been excited about it. The thing that has motivated us is today there's like 10 billion queries that happen on any given day, and by our estimation, roughly half go unanswered. And that to us is a huge opportunity to sort of reinvent search. The other big dynamic is that AI in the last number of months has seen an inflection. Both the technical capability has gotten so much better, but the user experience, this idea of being able to chat, both the combination of those two things has really come together to make for a big opportunity.
Yusuf, good afternoon to you. Busy day, as Caroline said. My question is, why now? You know, how ready is it? How convinced are you that Bing with AI is ready? I thought the timing was interesting.
Yeah, as I mentioned, we've been working at it for a while. We've been at it for many months. We do feel like we're ready to go to the limited preview, and we're happy to have shipped in that state. And the reason for that is that in the evolution of the technology, there's only so much you can do in the lab. And then eventually you get to a place where you need to get that, you know, end user feedback. You need to have that to come and improve the product. We feel confident today that we've got a wow idea in terms of how chat and search and the browser all come together. And we've put in all of the good work to make sure it is a stable system. And so we're looking forward now to getting feedback and then improving.
Yusuf, OpenAI has a closed profit model. It's been licensing access to ChatGPT and other tools to developers. Is there any element of exclusivity in this arrangement with OpenAI that gives you an advantage over others in utilizing the underlying technology, either for search or other applications?
OpenAI can work with many companies. The opportunity we have is that we've worked with them together so closely. So this latest AI model underneath the covers, which we announced today, is a brand new one. This one is much more powerful than ChatGPT, and it's tuned for search. We've worked together to make that happen. That's pretty unique. Certainly other companies can work with the technology, but I think we have a great collaboration there, and we're making that across because the cloud of Azure powers the back end. We've worked with them on the AI supercomputer. And we work with them on the monetization model as well. So across the board, we have a very deep partnership.
Talk to us about monetization. Satya Nadella, your CEO, saying the technology is going to reshape basically pretty much every software category. What does that mean in terms of revenues, particularly when it comes to boosting search, for example?
Well, the way to think about this is search is the largest software category and that's out there. Advertising as a whole is a $600 billion business, and search is the predominant part of that. We have an opportunity to reshape that, to bring new value to people, as we talked about, in terms of being able to answer questions, but also new value to advertisers who within that experience now can bring more targeted advertising and get better ROI. So the opportunity to improve that is something that we think is going to benefit everybody.
It's interesting. We went to our own audience via Twitter to ask them where they feel the winnings will be made. Now, not just talking about Google versus Baidu versus yourself at the moment, but China versus the US. And notably, interestingly, they didn't think, well, 38% thought that US technology companies were going to win the AI race. less likely China, but the robots win is actually where they came out with, Yusuf. That speaks to a point of the power of artificial intelligence, and at that point to re-correct itself, to improve upon itself. And to that end, I ask you about the concerns, the safety, the issues, the biases. How do you ensure that we're at the right place there to unleash this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Caroline. That's top of mind for us. We have focused now for many years on responsible AI. We've put forth principles and a framework, and we've done a lot of engineering in that regard. We've learned a lot from our past releases. So what we released today has a bunch of guardrails and safety in there for things like hate speech and violence and self-harm. We catch the queries when people type them in, and we can determine before it ever gets to the model or before it generates any content. We've trained the model specifically to catch these things, and then again before answers come out. So we've done a lot of work. That said, let's be clear, there are definitely bad actors out there that like to hack the system, and we're going to have to stay vigilant and on top of it. We feel that today is an important part, because part of how you get better and better is you have to go to market. You actually have to ship. You can't just solve these problems in a lab. And today is an important step to continue to improve on that, for AI being something that can work for everybody.
Yusuf, we talk about generative AI day in, day out on the show. It's great to have you on. Thank you, Yusuf Mehdi of Microsoft.
Thank you so much.
And Ed, you even talk about it day in, day out, not just from Microsoft's perspective, but some of the other competitors, right?
Yeah, so Baidu, the big name coming out overnight out of China, confirming a Bloomberg scoop that as soon as March, it will roll out, in English, ERNIE, its ChatGPT competitor in the form of generative AI, a chatbot. And it's interesting because they didn't do a big onstage splash with the press and with analysts gathered. They just made a statement and were out on Twitter kind of flexing a little bit about the roadmap for ERNIE. We've been reporting about the work they've done around this, Caro, but, Baidu is the Google of China, right? It dominates the search market there, and they plan to integrate that tool into their own search capabilities. And as we've discussed, the shares absolutely surging, both in Hong Kong and in the US in response.
Yeah, and just the element here that we've talked time and time again about US versus China. And just at one point, you think of the books that have been written, the focus from Kai-Fu Lee and many others, that China had really managed to get into the home so much faster. The use of, the very basic form of language AI that we're all used to, of basically asking Alexa or some sort of piece of equipment in our home. China led the way in that. And I wonder how much further ahead Baidu will end up becoming and how many checks and balances it will have itself.
Right. And what's so interesting is ERNIE is so similar to ChatGPT. It gives a conversational style response. They're just handling it slightly differently. A story will, of course, continue to track. Now, coming up, we're going to turn back to SoftBank and take a look at maybe a Vision Fund 3 plus a new fund from Goldman Sachs has its eyes set on more tech. We'll bring all of you that next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Time for talking tech. SoftBank may consider launching a third Vision Fund after it exhausts its available capital. An executive has told Bloomberg the Vision Fund 2 still has $6.5 billion for fresh investments. But SoftBank's marquee funds lost $5 billion in value in the December quarter, dragged down by those slumping valuations across private startups. It was the segment's fourth straight quarter of losses. And more, of course, in the world of AI. The Abu Dhabi-based AI company G42 hiring dozens of people in Singapore, Jakarta, Shanghai, and Tel Aviv to scout for opportunities for a $10 billion tech fund. That's according to sources. The fund will target technology investments across those countries, as well as markets in Saudi Arabia and in Egypt.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Caroline Hyde in New York. And lawmakers are targeting TikTok during a markup of three bipartisan proposals, according to reporting from Bloomberg government tech reporter Maria Curie. She joins us now from Capitol Hill.
Maria, the Senate Judiciary Committee is going to hold this hearing on protecting kids online next week, sources tell us. How much is this a long-term goal for Biden? I think he's discussed this in speeches before, relative to trying to put pressure on Congress to do something about it.
Sure. So this is definitely an issue that can be tackled from multiple angles, not just from Congress, but from relevant federal agencies like the Federal Trade Commission. And so it certainly can be a long-term goal on various fronts. But the Senate Judiciary Committee next week will put a focus on it early on in the 118th Congress. The witnesses have yet to be determined, but we can expect some conversations there on key legislation that did not make it across the finish line in the last Congress, but did come close.
Maria, what's interesting, when we've had guests on, in particular, well, FCC commissioners and the like, they've talked about perhaps that this should be driven, the TikTok focus should be coming from the administration rather than from Congress. Is there any update on CFIUS or in general where the administration stands on TikTok and our access to it?
Well, we heard recently that the president said he's not sure if TikTok should be banned in the country, but interestingly, Congress's approach would be giving the president more authority to limit TikTok. So it would still end up being an executive branch effort. Importantly, Senator Warner is working on a bill that would prevent giving other countries a platform for retaliating against U.S. companies. So that's certainly a consideration moving forward as we see more and more bills crop up. Today's markup of the three TikTok bills were different in the sense that they would empower consumers to have more knowledge about their app. They would, distributors would be required to tell consumers that it is owned by a company that is based in China and that their data is being collected. And so this is taking on a different approach. Instead of banning or limiting the app, it would just be empowering consumers with more information.
Maria Curie of Bloomberg Government. Now, staying in Washington, two U.S. senators expressed their concern to Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg over the risk of developers in China and Russia having access to user data. They say Meta's Facebook unit knew in 2018 that, quote, hundreds of thousands of developers in countries characterized as high risk had access to significant amounts of sensitive user data. The senators said their staff held meetings with company execs to determine who could get the data and what Facebook planned to do about it, particularly with regards to protecting users' information. Let's stick with Meta. The company is asking many of its managers and directors to transition to individual contributor jobs or leave the company as it tries to become more efficient. Joining us for more is Bloomberg's Sarah Friar, who broke this story. I mean, Sarah, since we reported the kind of mass round of layoffs at Meta, I imagine there are a number of employees who have been waiting for the axe to drop. But in this case, it's very specific roles that Mark Zuckerberg and co. appear to be going after.
Right. If you're a Meta employee, ever since those 13% cuts in November, this historic time for the company, you've seen a number of other rounds of layoffs at other companies, and you're thinking, you know, what's coming next? Are we going to have another round? Amazon had another round. And what it turns out from our sources is there is a thinning of the ranks happening at Meta as we speak, that managers are getting told by their supervisors, you need to get to a point where you're doing individual contributor work, whether that's coding, research, design, whatever that is that you can do that is part of building as opposed to managing. That is what Meta values right now. That's where we want to push it forward. And if you can't do that, if you don't find yourself in a role like that, we'll have to ask you to leave. And here's a nice package.
To that point, the nice package bit, Sarah, if you're being asked to pull back on managerial role but do more yourself, is that more valuable or less in terms of recompense to you?
Well, it's unclear whether people are being asked as they make those transitions to take lower salaries. I imagine that would be hard to swallow if you're a Meta employee. But I think the important factor here is that the company is trying to become more efficient. Zuckerberg has called it the year of efficiency. They're calling this move the flattening. They're trying to make sure that there are fewer steps to getting things done and trying to make sure that products are better, profits are better, all things across the board can in theory be solved by having fewer middle managers, RIP to all of us who have that role apparently. So I think that is the takeaway. Whether Meta will actually be more efficient as a result of this thinning, I don't know. I mean, I think that there are, you know, roles that have been created for a reason. But what I have heard in talking to employees at the company is there is some encouraging signs here. People who have noticed that there are some managers that only are in charge of one or two employees, that there are some teams that are tasked with doing jobs that are in conflict or in competition with what other teams are doing. So certainly those things can be sort of out and fixed in this next round, and maybe the fact that they're not doing it all at once and more on an individual basis gives them time to be more thoughtful, since I think there was a lot of tension following the last layoffs that people didn't hear about until the last minute.
Now, every single person wants to be more productive, more effective at work, have more impact. Do we know if there's bits of the business that this is going to really affect, where the bloating really got from a managerial perspective?
Well, I think that the company wants to really focus on some of their core initiatives. We know that they want to improve their artificial intelligence for better ad targeting, for better algorithmic sharing on their Reels products, trying to make sure that people get the right videos. They're trying to ensure that some of the work they're doing on Horizon Worlds can translate to a mobile phone user. So there's some really key initiatives that they're working towards here that are focused on profits. One of them that was mentioned on the earnings call that caught my eye was this transition to making money in messaging, which is something that people have been asking Meta about for years, and Zuckerberg says they're now at $10 billion annual run rate in revenue there. So I think that we're going to see the company get a lot more focused, a lot less experimental, throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks, and more thoughtful about where they spend their time going forward to try to bring, you know, this sense of efficiency and energy in the next few months.
So far, the music to some investors' ears, at least. Bloomberg, Sarah Fry, thank you so much. Great reporting, even though she's, of course, senior editor of that team. Meanwhile, coming up, we'll talk about the future of mobility, from EVs here on Earth to planes to the moon. More on that next with Up Partners co-founder Cyrus Segari. He's just published a key report for full insights on all of this. And Ed, you're keeping a keen eye on certain shares right now.
Yeah, let's continue to look at Microsoft. As I said, the stock moving in lockstep with the S&P 500. A lot of this about Fed Chair Powell's comments, but there is some buoyancy around using OpenAI's tech with Bing, with the Edge browser, and what they can do to boost their competitiveness against Google, in particular in the world of search. Investors clearly liking what they see. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop.
customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Later tonight, President Biden is expected to discuss his economic progress so far, including how the Inflation Reduction Act will drive manufacturing and supply chain improvements for the adoption of electric vehicles and, by extension, cut U.S. emissions. Speaking of which, UP Partners just published its own Moving World report, which looks at all of the macro and micro trends across mobility and transport in 2023. The venture firm's report is based on hundreds of research studies, dozens of interviews, and draws some critical conclusions. Firstly, that funding for mobility has outpaced most tech sectors. But secondly, mobility has become the most important segment when it comes to looking at how we combat emissions here in North America and beyond. Joining us to discuss, Cyrus Sagari, managing partner and co-founder of UP Partners. And Cyrus, before you joined us here in San Francisco for the show, you posted on LinkedIn about the report coming out, and hundreds of people engaged with you and said, I'd like to see it. But those are the two key conclusions: more money from VCs into mobility than any other subsector, and also that mobility counts for more emissions. What is it that you've discovered or found?
Yeah, thanks for having us. The big takeaway is that mobility is growing rapidly. 30x increase in venture investment in mobility, and it represents about 38% of all CO2 emissions. It's a $10 trillion market. And so we have this convergence of perhaps one of the most important things for society today, which is how do we reduce carbon emissions with how we move things on the ground, air, sea, and space, people and packages. And we're seeing opportunity for real economic development as a result of it.
So I guess the conclusions are clear. This is where the money's going. This is what's the biggest contributor to emissions, backward looking. When you think about mobility, you're a venture capitalist. You know, you and I have spent some time with some of your portfolio companies and areas you invest. What did the findings of the report push you to do with your own investment thesis and where you're looking to make change?
Well, we just released it. So now we get to actually go make some decisions based off the data. And we made it open source so others can as well. A couple of key takeaways. One is in the aviation industry. We are facing a major pilot shortage. We'll be at 65,000 pilots short by the year 2030. That is a huge impact to our economy if we don't fix. So we're looking to invest in technologies and businesses that can solve that. Two is, as we go towards electrification of everything, a massive material shortage. We're looking at a 10x increase in lithium-ion batteries. We already saw close to an 800% increase in the lithium-ion price index. That entire ecosystem for technologies to help create lithium-ion batteries cleaner, faster, cheaper, more accessible is a huge area of continued investment for us.
One of the charts that jumped out from me at the report was the kind of demand curve for batteries going through 2030, an area Bloomberg New Energy Finance has looked at as well. When you discuss with your portfolio companies in this area, or you go out as with making an investment in mind, how do you fix the problem? You know, which areas do you invest in that are offering solutions to fight this shortage of supply?
Yeah, so we've made a couple of direct investments in this space. Just recently, a company called Aonix, which is using AI to help understand what materials can help solve
another AI company.
There you go. So it's AI and energy put together. So it's very relevant based off what's going on. We also have an investment in a company called Unit X, which is using computer vision, AI, in factories to help look at batteries for their faults. You know, battery fires are a big, big deal. It can be up to 45 minutes to put out a battery fire for an EV. So ensuring you've got high quality of product going out the door, using technology to do that, big areas of investment.
What about the focus federally? What about a desire for lowering emissions and seeing, obviously, a labor shortage alleviated coming from an administration? Is that a headwind or a tailwind for you at the moment?
Well, the Inflation Reduction Act has created some pretty significant tailwinds for this whole industry. We're looking at close to $150 billion allocated out of the Inflation Reduction Act into hydrogen, into clean energy, into transportation, which is going to create all sorts of new activity in and around mobility, specifically here in the United States. One big piece of news is the upcoming Green Deal in Europe. They're looking at close to $1 trillion to be allocated towards going net zero by 2050. This is a huge secular change in all things moving people and goods on the ground, air, sea, and space. And so it's having literally an act of Congress, be it here or in Europe or elsewhere, is going to be required to see these major, major changes in how we move about this planet.
I mean, you're a man who's so passionate about how you move about this planet, in particular flying. You've, from a very young age, understood how to navigate the skies. Talk to us about, there are other people who navigate the skies, who run these businesses. I think of the Delta CEO, and many have come on very passionately wanting to bring down their own emissions curve and ways in which to do that. Are you seeing the sort of focus on real innovation here coming from the big companies, or does it have to come from the smaller companies that you back?
I think it's really a partnership between entrepreneurs and the largest companies in the world to really affect major change in how we move people and goods around the world. A company like Zipline, which is using drones to do package delivery in partnership with Walmart in Bentonville, Arkansas today, where they did over 500,000 delivery flights last year. And we've seen a 2x increase in the number of drone delivery flights from last year, which doubled the previous year, which doubled the year before. So I think to your specific question, you got to get the entrepreneurs partnering with the largest companies in the world to really collectively transform the way we move things.
So you're a very able pilot across a number of classes of aircraft. As you know, my head is often up in space, and I was really interested to see a focus of your report and the opportunity outside of Earth's atmosphere. Why go there? Why look at that?
Well, it's really the last frontier for us is space. And I think it's so important to recognize the consequences of what Elon is doing with Starship. The way people should think about Starship is like the railway to space. It's effectively making it almost free to get a pound of payload to orbit. And when you make it practically free to get a pound of payload to orbit, you can't even begin to understand what the consequences will be in new businesses and opportunities like a base on the moon or Mars or whatever it might be. So this is a huge area of investment and interest, I think, collectively.
All right, Sara Sagari, managing partner, co-founder at Up Partners. Good to catch up. You know, what's so interesting, Kara, for me as well is the opportunity as an investor. You know, we see so many of these reports, but Sara is saying there, actually, sustainability offers an attractive return down the road. Sticking with sustainability, from investment to reality, Amazon has started selling lettuce leaves through an investment made 2 years ago in the startup Hippo Harvest. The leaves are produced using 92% less water, 55% less fertilizer than conventionally produced crops, according to Hippo. Nick Ellis from the Amazon Climate Pledge Fund joins me here in San Francisco. That's the story. How did this investment become a real product for Amazon?
It was a collaborative effort between Amazon and Hippo Harvest over the last 15 months. When we first diligenced and sourced the deal, we saw two really compelling features about the opportunity. One was to drive down the price, and the second was to increase the quality of the investment.
Right.
And so we've worked for 15 months now, hand in hand, to bring this product into market in our fresh stores, iterating on the timing, the packaging, the quality of the produce, the price point, and we're finally able to get it over the line and proud to announce it here today.
Well, let's talk about the economics of it then. My understanding is they have a pretty small national footprint down near Santa Clara or Santa Cruz. Is this a moneymaker? Is this a viable business long-term for Amazon to make these investments and convert them to product?
Absolutely. From the Amazon Climate Pledge Fund point of view, we have a dual mandate of both reducing carbon emissions for Amazon and also looking to do it profitably. So for us, Hippo Harvest really represents the best of both of those cases, and I think they're already demonstrating that down there in Pescadero, and the hope is that that scales throughout the network and around the world here in the years ahead.
Can you give us a sense on timing of scaling? When might I get it in New York? When can you get it abroad?
It's going to take time, Caroline. We're in a crawl, walk, run experimentation phase. The first step is just to get it into the market and validate customers are interested in purchasing it. Our expectation is we will scale that throughout the Amazon and Whole Foods ecosystem. And then we're going to look to support Hippo Harvest as they try and expand both domestically and internationally. But we would expect that's going to take a couple of years before we finally hit that stride.
We've been looking at some of the pictures of how this all works. I can see your robots that are there. And I know you're a man who talks about startups, about climate, but you also talk about workforce. How is this sort of focus, this efficiency, going to be impacting blue-collar workers and an ability to need that sort of labor?
Well, we're just beginning to learn how these robots are going to change the dynamics on the farm. I think one thing we've seen early on is that Hippo Harvest is still employing local employees and bringing their farm expertise to bear to help produce this produce. And then we're also seeing new jobs emerge, obviously servicing and supporting the robots, but also doing quality assurance and control and supply chain management to modernize these farms. And so my suspicion is the net of it's going to be we see job growth in both areas as we look to secure our food supply chain there.
Nick, I know you're an Amazon Climate Pledge Fund principal. That's your job. My question, can Hippo move as fast as it's done without Amazon behind it? Does it take an Amazon to bring this kind of rapid success?
Certainly having Amazon behind you is a key catalyst. I think one of the things we've looked for in our investments, though, are proven entrepreneurs that can reliably deliver innovations to market. Certainly with Hippo Harvest, we have serial entrepreneurs here, and they've done it again. So our expectation is we'll see more of the same, and it doesn't necessarily require Amazon.
Very, very quickly, have you eaten the lettuce? Is it good?
I have. It's fantastic. Highly recommend everybody give it a try.
Okay.
It's quite the array. From romaine to all types of lettuce. We thank you so much for coming on and talking all about it. Amazon Climate Pledge Fund Principal Nick Ellis. Meanwhile, that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. We're going to talk about key earnings coming thick and fast on Wednesday. It's Uber on deck. CEO Dara Khosrowshahi joins Bloomberg 11:30 a.m. Eastern. That's 8:30 a.m. Pacific. You, of course, don't want to miss that sort of conversation. From New York, from San Francisco, this is Bloomberg.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.